D-Mace Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you on the Friday before Christmas.
Yay, yay.
We hope you are having a wonderful day, a beautiful day, after all of that rain last night.
It's gone.
I do want to take a moment to gloat. I did not do this yesterday. Silly Underdog Picks will return on Monday. Mm-hmm. I got my pick right.
Yes.
I picked Old Dominion to beat South Florida. So I'm creeping up on Derek Mason, whose pick is losing 24-7 late in the first half.
Yeah, they're losing right now.
So but I'm feeling pretty good.
Win or lose, who's still number one? Me.
We'll see.
Win or lose this game, who's still number one? Me.
For now. For now, you are number one. But I'm coming for you.
Oh,
in the meantime, Scott Ramsey, president and CEO of the Music City Bowl, will join us at 3:40. We also have one more pair of Music City Bowl tickets to give away today. We will do that at some point during the show. I will let you know soon exactly when. I've come up with yet another trivia question, another tough one, I like to think. So we'll see how much you know about the Music City Bowl. I will give you the cue to call. Eventually, you have to be listening, so don't turn that dial, because then you might miss out on your chance to win that pair of Music City Bowl tickets. But I think we should start today's show, guys, with a very important update on something we discussed at the end of yesterday's show. At the end of yesterday's show, we brought you the story of 11-year-old Nolan McGill. He is an elementary school student in Chattanooga who has gone viral for refusing to sing Rocky Top at his school's Christmas pageant. He is a diehard Georgia fan. And I said yesterday, I admire that young man. He did not sacrifice his principles just because his class sang Rocky Top at the Christmas pageant. As Derek would say, he stood on business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Grace Rayner of The Athletic did some very important journalism. She called the family of 11-year-old Nolan McGill to get the story about why he chose not to participate. I've got to find this quote from Nolan. Here it is. Quote, "It's just a bad song. I'm a Georgia fan. Georgia's just better than Tennessee." End quote. Grace Rayner continues. Nolan said his class first started rehearsing Rocky Top more than a month ago on November 10th. When his music teacher told students that they would be singing four songs for Tuesday's holiday program, Nolan had no beef with the first three, happy to vibe right along with the rest of the group with a big smile on his face. But when he found out the fourth song was Rocky Top, he decided he had to stick to his principles and set some boundaries. Quote, "We practiced that song 100 times, and even in class, I'm just sitting there not singing. My classmates kept saying, 'Nolan, it's your favorite song. Come on, sing it.' You couldn't pay me to sing that song," end quote.
Hey, standing on business.
I admire this young man even more.
Hey, young man standing on business. I don't care how many times y'all seen that song, I ain't singing it. Hogwash. Hey, he's standing on business. I like it, young man. Keep on.
So I appreciate.
Like Chattanooga's not that far from Georgia. You know, you can get down there pretty quick from there. So I question the choice.
You know,
I question
you know,
the choice.
Hold on. You know what's going to happen? This is what's going to happen. This kid's going to end up being the eighth-ranked left tackle in all of high school. He's going to go to Georgia. That's what's going to happen. He's going to go to Georgia because he's standing on business.
He's looking into the crystal ball.
He's standing on business. And Tennessee's going to try to recruit him. And you know what he's going to do? Shake his head like he did. As a matter of fact, he's going to send that picture to him, that video. He's going to send it to him. I ain't going to your school.
That's how he's going to turn down Tennessee.
Yep. He's going to send that video to them.
7-8 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen.
Yeah.
It could happen. But I saw that story today. I thought you all needed an update because I didn't think I could admire Nolan McGill more. And then I read his quotes in The Athletic, and that's my little dude.
You're saying he's a fine young man.
That he's a fine young man. We should
smart
all,
young man.
We should all
Is he
strive.
The only? I cannot imagine that he's the only Georgia fan in that class. In Chattanooga. Chattanooga's, 30 minutes from the Georgia
border?
Not even.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Well, their mothers did not record them not singing Rocky Top.
Yeah.
So he's famous.
He's famous now.
Yes. He went viral. And you know what? That's why we record everything our children do, because one day it could go viral. So we'll see.
Just hope in a good way. Yes, not in a bad way.
I've seen some viral clips that are...
How did this dude get that open?
Oh, my goodness. What is going
on? I'm sorry, people, but Memphis is just...
There's no showing.
Oh, my goodness. Did they not... They didn't even... That's not even Memphis out there. That's Memph.
That's Fis, not Mem. That's Fis.
30, what that is.
30-7 NC State against Memphis, pending the extra point with a minute and 28 left in the Gasparilla Bowl.
I honestly think I could have thrown that.
Yeah,
pass.
That pass. Hey, oh my goodness.
We don't have to talk about this game right now.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that. I'm just putting that out there. We don't have to talk about this. We can talk about whatever else we want to talk about.
That coverage was so blown. I mean, you're right. We could have threw that.
It was a balloon. He threw a hot air balloon, but the guy was so open. He just stood there and waited for the ball.
The guy checked his watch, you know,
yeah.
Did a dance and everything.
There was nobody in the same area.
Exactly.
Code.
Wow, blown coverage.
You know me, I'm no fan of NC State, but I can get behind the Wolfpack in this instance.
Oh,
because
I'm sure you
Derek
can.
Derek Mason is going down.
I'm sure you can. Look
but,
at this.
But we will resume silly underdog picks on Monday. Let's start with the local professional football team. The Tennessee Titans have three games left this season, starting Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs at Nissan Stadium without Patrick Mahomes, who underwent knee surgery earlier this week, and apparently like half the team. I saw a tweet from Adam Schefter within the past hour that listed like 8 or 9 different players who will not be playing for the Chiefs. So the Titans sure as hell have an opportunity to win a home game for the first time in more than a calendar year, and we'll talk about that. But once these three games are over, the Titans coaching search can begin in earnest. And Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com wrote a story yesterday ranking the most coveted NFL head coaching jobs that might come open this offseason. At the moment, there are only two, the Titans and the Giants. Barnwell assumes that six more will open. Here are the teams he's including in this rankings. Cincinnati, Cleveland, Arizona, Miami, Atlanta, of course the Giants and the Titans, as well as the Raiders. All fair, right?
Mm-hmm.
All fair. Teams.
The Raiders, Pete Carroll, he's going down. One-year wonder. That's it?
I don't know. Have you seen the Raiders?
I mean, the word that you used was assume. Like, we're assuming Pete Carroll? Is he?
I guess.
Is he gone?
We're assuming. You know what they say about assuming?
Yes. Yeah.
We're close to assuming.
Yes.
We speculate.
So Barnwell lists these eight teams in order of how coveted they might be for prospective coaches. The Tennessee Titans landed at number 4 on this list, behind the Bengals at number 1, the Cardinals, somewhat surprisingly, at number 2, and the Browns at number 3. And a lot of the reasons that the Titans' job could be coveted, according to Barnwell, are things that we've heard so many times. Have you guys heard that there's no state income tax in Tennessee? Have you heard that?
A few times.
Have you heard that?
Just a couple.
That could be enticing to a potential head coach. I don't know if you've heard that before. But there are a couple of things within his explanation that stood out to me. And it starts with this. Quote, could the Titans be next year's version of the Patriots? The 2024 Pats went 4-13 and fired Gerard Mayo after one disappointing season, but there were reasons to believe that they had landed their quarterback of the future in Drake May. He didn't put up impressive numbers in his debut season, but with little help at receiver and along the offensive line, May still flashed potential on film. He goes on to mention the Patriots hired the right coaches and Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, leveraged the league's most cap space by going on an offseason spending spree and free agency, so on and so forth. Barnwell continues, when I've talked to people around the league and asked them which team and which quarterback might profile as the 2026 version of the Patriots, the Titans have been the most frequent answer. I was sort of surprised by that. He continues, Cam Ward is last in the league in total QBR, and he has struggled to generate consistent yardage. But there are signs of real promise in the first pick's tape, even if those plays don't always result in catches or conversions. Ward has a live arm, and he's getting to the right answers more often as the season goes along. But let's start.
Wow, that's an optimistic outlook.
I don't hear very much about that.
Yeah. That's encouraging.
But let's unpack that part that Barnwell wrote at the beginning. In talking to people around the league, asking those people which team and which quarterback might profile as the 2026 version of the Patriots, the Titans have been the most frequent answer. Does that surprise you?
Yes. I don't foresee that. Just with my view of their roster right now, I can't see it. But strange things happen in this league. I didn't watch Drake May play every week last year, but I feel like he had more promising games than Cam Ward has had. You know, the Titans game being one of them. They lost the game, but, you know, he showed in that game that he looked like he was a weapon, a potential weapon. I feel like his numbers were better than Cam Ward's are this year, last year. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, the numbers are identical. I spelled those numbers out yesterday. The numbers are identical. He played 13 games. Cam's is in his 14th game. The numbers are identical. What the difference is the completion percentage. But, and then obviously the overall QBR. But if you're just talking strictly numbers, in 13 games, the numbers for him are, they resemble the numbers of Cam right now with an extra game. So,
Drake May last season went 3-9 as the Patriots starter compared to 2-12 so far for Cam Ward. Drake May completed 66.6% of his passes compared to 59.3% for Ward. May had a rating of 88.1 compared to Ward's 76.5. Mm-hmm. So May did flash.
The numbers
more
are better.
Yes, the numbers
Ward
are better. Yes.
But I'm encouraged by what Barnwell is seeing, because that's what you have encouraged everybody to do, D-Base, is look mm-hmm. past the numbers and say, if you look beneath it, there's potential there.
And I don't think people and listen, again, because we get a lot of, you know, we get callers calling in or texting in saying, you know, as recent as I think the beginning of the week, the Titans sold us on this and he was going to be this and he's not that. So I can get some of why people are disappointed, because the Titans, in their mind, they believe the Titans oversold him, even though I don't believe that was the case. But there are people that do. And then you look at the roster. I mean, you know, this roster compared to New England's roster last year, I would tend to believe, because those rookie guys are the guys that are helping them now again. They went in and got an influx of veteran guys because they had one of the largest cap space in the National Football League. So they went out and they got the right guys. And then also the guys that were there from the previous year, they were able to continue to develop them. The Titans, like you said, Willie, yeah, is there a possibility that they could be the New England Patriots? Yeah, there is a possibility. The possibility is slim because I think their roster.
But when we're talking Patriots, the Patriots are yes. 9-3.
No. What I'm saying is this: the possibility of that happen, there, it can happen. I'm not going to sit here and say nothing can happen. It can happen. But the Titans are in too deep of a hole, I believe, as far as their roster. And if that happens, everything that New England had happen for them this season, it needs to happen plus a little bit more for the Titans. Strength of schedule.
Cam
taking another step, these rookies developing, the rookies from this year developing again, them going out and hitting big and hitting with the right guy in free agency, something that they have not been able to do in the last couple of years. So it can happen, but they got to hit it and hit it right.
I'd be thrilled if they went, because what have we said a lot over the years, mm-hmm. D-Mace? You can go from being a really, really bad team 2-3 wins.
Yes.
You can get from that to 6 or 7 without a whole lot. The hard part is to get up to, you know, 10-11 wins. I just can't see a jump to where the Patriots are. I would be disappointed if they don't get to a point where you can get into that 6-7 win. I mean, they need to start winning some games.
Barnwell notes, of the 11 players who have suited up for at least 45% of the offensive snaps this season in New England alongside May, 7 were imported via free agency or the draft this offseason. So Barnwell's theory is the Titans, who have the league's most cap space, just like the Patriots did 1 year ago, if the Titans can import that much offensive talent into the onto the roster, again, the quarterbacks are a big part of it. Drake May, a more highly regarded prospect than Cam Ward. But the Titans do have to take advantage of the cap space they have. They need to draft well. It would help if they had the number one overall pick and trade out of it and get more draft capital, but it appears that may not happen. But I can see where Barnwell is coming from. You've got a young quarterback who has shown some promise playing on a bad team. The Patriots made the right coaching hire by bringing in Mike Vrabel, bringing in Josh McDaniels, drafted well, brought in the right veterans and free agency. Yes, they have had the easiest schedule in the league. That helps, but it's all combined to put the Patriots in the driver's seat in the playoffs, in what, the number two seed right now in the AFC? So, again, I'm on Willie's side here. I don't think we should expect a Patriots-like turnaround in Tennessee next season, but the opportunity is there in the offseason for them to get significantly better.
I'm not saying that they will. They are a candidate for a turnaround like New England. But, keyword, but, or if, you know, this happened, they got to go out and they got to bring in the right free agents. New England was able to bring in the right free agents. They got to draft and develop the right guys over the last season, which they're doing now, which it would be this season, and then the guys that they go out and get. And then you better make sure you have the right coach that's going to then develop these players. New England got the right coach at the right time with the softest schedule, and they get a little leeway for their guys to develop. They got a good system for their young quarterback, and he's flourishing. But they had to have a lot of things happen in order for them to be in a position that they're in now. I'm not sure. I mean, the Titans may be able to do it. They may not. But we talked about the Titans possibly using, you know, Miami as a what not to do. Well, this should be a what to do when you're looking at New England. And the most important thing outside of the quarterback is those guys that you go and get in free agency, they got to hit, because those guys are able to sort of keep the boat afloat while those younger guys develop. We thought that was going to happen this year and last year with Snead and Ridley and those guys, but it didn't. They just fell deeper into the ocean. New England got it right for now. Houston got it right 2 years ago. They took a step back, and now they're back again. So these things run in cycles. That's why I say the Titans can do it, but things have to happen perfectly for them.
615-737-1025. Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com said he spoke to league people and asked which team could be the 2026 version of the New England Patriots. And according to Barnwell, the Titans were the number one answer. How realistic do you think that is? 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines, again, are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Speaking of this program, we will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday, prior to the Monday Night Football matchup between the 49ers and the Colts. That was Adam Schefter laying it on a little thick, yes. I think. Just Man. A little bit.
I mean, it was envisioning him with blue pom-poms.
Just a little thick, Adam Schefter. Take it from someone who knows a thing or two about desperation when I was younger.
As the young kids say, he glazed the Titans.
I don't like when you say that.
But that's like a over-complimenting the young kids. Over-complimenting. Just putting it on thick, like, you slow down, man. You ain't got to put it on that thick.
Hold on,
man.
Hold on. Stop.
Hey, I'm just telling you what the kids say.
That's what
the kids
say.
Run the world. So yeah. There you go.
Okay, hold on.
There you go.
I got to take a breath. Okay. Derek Mason saying glaze just took over Willie Donick saying all up in there.
No, it's not even close to that.
No, it's not. That's exactly.
It's not even close to that.
What D-May said was funny.
Exactly.
But
what he
said,
I'm on Willie's side here.
Oh, no. You're always on Willie's side.
Always.
That's not true.
Join the good side.
When is he not on Willie's
always.
Side?
Always.
Thank you. Thank you. No, but what you said, Willie, yeah.
What I said was spot on.
I didn't say it wasn't spot on.
The right phrase at the right time.
All right.
Either way, everyone laughing. That's
all right.
Sure.
Let's gather ourselves here. Adults.
Let's go.
Let's be adults. But Adam Schefter making the case for the Titans as a destination for a head coaching candidate, and everything he said
is cap space really good.
I'm not sure how much that matters in the NFL.
Didn't they have a lot of cap space a few years ago?
Part of the reason is they don't have a lot of players that they are re-signing and investing in. That's where you want to use that. And it illustrates to me how few players they have said, yeah, that's
second
a good
contract.
Draft pick. Let's give them the second contract. Mm-hmm. If having all that money to go on the free agent market, as we've seen.
But then they have a lot of money a few years
with
ago.
Disaster. Exactly. Well,
yeah,
that's what
they
happened.
They spent it wrong.
Well, because those players usually aren't that good. You have to overpay. Mm-hmm. Dan Moore is the latest example. You overpay and you get kind of a meh. But you say, hey, we got all that cap space. We spent all that money.
Yeah.
And your fans are like, well, we spent all this money. We should be winning. That's not the way to win in the NFL.
They have not spent the money wisely.
Yes.
That's the issue.
But it's a dilemma because, if they had picks that were worth the second contract, it would be easy to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But they are caught between the rock and the hard place. And I just listed some guys for you guys yesterday.
And we're going to talk about that later.
We briefly mentioned that yesterday. We'll get to it later. But you have the same kind of dilemma with guys like Chigga Conquo. Do you want him?
Yeah.
He's all right. You want him on your team? You can have him. You can pay him. You let him go. Who are you going to get? You got to get somebody else. Is he better than Chig?
The reason we bring this up is Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com did a ranking of the confirmed openings and the potential openings for head coaches in the NFL. He listed 8 teams. He has the Titans ranked 4th on that list. But within his explanation, he mentioned, quote, the Patriots hired the right coaches in Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, leveraged the league's most cap space by going on an offseason spending spree in free agency, and built a competent offensive architecture around Drake May. Playing one of the easiest schedules in league history has helped, but May is an MVP candidate in 2025, and the Patriots are in the position to win the AFC East. When I, meaning Barnwell, have talked to people around the league and asked them which team and which quarterback might profile as a 2026 version of the Patriots, the Titans and Cam Ward have been the most frequent answer. And he mentioned, of the 11 players who have suited up for at least 45% of the offensive snaps this season in New England alongside May, 7 were imported via free agency or the draft this offseason. That includes Stephon Diggs. That includes Travion Henderson, who was a second-round pick. That includes Mac Hollins. That includes Will Campbell, who was also a top draft pick for the New England Patriots. So all of those things have combined. The Patriots hired the right coach and coaching staff. They seem to nail their free agency additions, or at least most of them. I can't talk about every single one of them. I don't watch a ton of Patriots football. So they did that, and they drafted reasonably well. So all of those things combined with the easy schedule has led the Patriots to an incredible turnaround. So I'm not sure how realistic that is for the Titans, but there are elements of what the Patriots did, Derek, that the Titans, as you said, we talked about the Dolphins yesterday. And how should the Titans avoid what happened with Tua and the Dolphins? We're having a similar conversation now. How can the Titans replicate what the Patriots did to the best of their ability to turn this thing around sooner rather than later?
Well, first, it's going to have to start with, obviously, the head coach they hire. New England hired the right head coach. So that's a part of the battle. The Titans got to figure out which coach they want, you know, to lead their franchise for them, hopefully for the next 10-plus years. And then they got to go out and, you know, free agency. We saw this book a couple of years ago, this movie a couple of years ago with the Titans, and they had the money to spend, and they went out and spent it, and it didn't work out well for them at all. They got to make sure this go around because these, you know, having all this money, it ain't going to always be like, you know, like that. And you hope it's not. You hope that they're able to develop, re-sign guys so you don't have this much money in the coffer. You got guys that you can depend on and that you're going to win with. But they got to make sure they go out and get the right free agency because, again, these are the guys, as you're developing these younger guys, and it's happening in New England, these are the guys that are holding up the franchise or the team while these young guys are able to develop, which means you ain't got to rush them. You ain't got to rush these guys. You put them in situations where they can succeed. They're playing in games that are meaningful games, so you don't have to do anything out of the ordinary to try to win games. Games are close. Games are managed. You do well. Your quarterback develops. So looking at what New England did, it's not like they did something that hadn't been done before in the NFL.
They did not reinvent the wheel.
Exactly. And the Titans just got to – they got to find – and they hadn't been good at it in recent years. Developing the talent that they draft, and then those veteran guys being able to hold the team up while that talent develops along with the quarterback. Because, listen, the quarterback doesn't have to come out and throw for 4,000 yards. He doesn't. If you got a team around him that is good, you can develop him in a way that the numbers may not look great. They may be good numbers. But in those good numbers, you see more development because you don't have to take more chances because you got a team around you that is able to hold you up and the young quarterback up as well. And that is what Mike Vrabel has done with this team. And the quarterback has excelled in it.
Ryan on our text line says, you could say the same thing about the Chicago Bears. Look at their turnaround. Basically everything I said about the Patriots sort of applies to
and,
the Bears.
And probably not quite as impressive with Williams, like his numbers aren't as good as May. And they also, I think, have benefited from a favorable schedule, a couple breaks in the schedule, as we discussed the other day. But it's so weird how every year in the league there's a story like this. And you can study all you want about how these teams did it, and I'm not sure it's easy to replicate sometimes. Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah, but it seems like everyone, it's not like something like, oh, that team's doing that. Oh, that team. It's like they're all doing sort of about the same thing, you know, as far as you don't have to reinvent the wheel. What did Borgonzi say? Draft, develop, and retain.
Right.
That's what it's about. But then when you're at that bottom stage, like the Titans find themselves, yes, you got to worry about draft, develop, and retain, but that takes time, so you got to go out and you got to make sure you bring in the right guys free agency-wise.
And also, I think it's important to make this distinction. We don't know if these teams can win in the playoffs yet, right? The Bears and the Patriots in particular. Winning and having a really good regular season is one thing. Being able to win in the playoffs is when you really find out if you have an excellent team. Fair?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because if they get put out in the first round, assuming they don't have a bye.
The Patriots could have a bye. We'll see.
So if they have a bye, then okay. But if they don't have a bye, if for some instance Buffalo ends up winning, you know, or Denver ends up winning, I think Denver is closer. Denver ends up winning the AFC, and New England gets put out in the first round. People are going to wonder, well, are they as good as we thought they might have been, or are they just a beneficiary of a very weak schedule with a team that's good but not what the record truly indicated?
At the moment, the Patriots would host the Texans on wild card weekend. We know how good that Texans defense is.
Yep.
The Bears would host the Packers on wild card weekend.
And they, you know, they can hang with the Packers. There's no question. But that's where the rubber meets the road. Like last year, I wonder, like people in Washington have to be thinking, Was last year just everything came together? Like, were we really that good? Like, they got the great year from Daniels. This year, they are 2-7. Wait, how many games did they play? 14.
2-5, I believe.
2-5
earlier this week.
2-5 with Daniels. 2-5 with Marcus Mariota. So even when Daniels has played, they haven't been great. Is it all because Daniels has fallen off? I don't know. Like, did they overachieve some last year? And they got to the NFC Championship game. But so you do see that sometimes with a league full of parity.
A few of the games that they won were like last second games.
True. You know?
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the Titans who host the Chiefs on Sunday. We will pick up that conversation in just a bit. But in the meantime, Scott Ramsey, Music City Bowl president and CEO, will join us coming up next to talk about the game between Tennessee and Illinois coming up in a week and a half at Nissan Stadium. Of course, we do have one more pair of Music City Bowl tickets to give away. We will be doing that during the show. I will let you know soon when you can win those tickets, so you have to be listening because I'm not going to give you too much warning. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. Looking for a great spot to pregame on Sunday before the Titans game? Stop by John Bon Jovi's and pregame with us at 1025 The Game. JBJ's has the best food on Broadway, cold beer and cocktails, stunning skyline views, including two epic rooftops. The pregame show is brought to you by Parma Tractor and Equipment and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Music City Bowl, Tennessee versus Illinois, is coming up later this month at Nissan Stadium. And to help us discuss that, we go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in President and CEO of the Music City Bowl, Scott Ramsey. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good, Adam. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. So you've been doing this a while. It's the 27th edition of the Music City Bowl, and you've got a couple of firsts here. You have Illinois appearing in the Music City Bowl for the first time. It's also the first matchup between Tennessee and Illinois in football. So you've got two firsts there. How excited is that when you are able to do something you've never done before?
Yeah, I think that's always a great opportunity for us, you know, in postseason. Especially when you look at Big Ten, SEC, a chance to do that, which really you got to think there's probably not many combinations that have never played as long as these schools have been around. But especially Tennessee, Illinois with the proximity to each other. So, you know, it's going to be exciting. You know, we've got very few opt-outs. We've got the quarterbacks playing, it looks like, knock on wood right now. You know, I think both fan bases that can get here and really create a great, you know, environment for, especially for the seniors playing their last game that maybe not be moving on. So, you know, I hope it's a great environment and we're excited about the game this year.
Scott, I do want to ask you a football adjacent question. The Nashville Predators announced earlier this week that Nick Saban has purchased a minority stake in the franchise. How did you react when you heard that news?
I didn't know how to react. Maybe you guys could tell me how I should react. I don't think they're going to change their colors from gold, though. So probably not. You know, Willie, I think we're stuck with gold as long as Sean is there.
I think you're right.
It'll be interesting. You know, I think one of the things, though, in seriousness, I relay it really to our new title sponsor in Liberty Mutual for the bowl. I mean, this is an odd year for the Bulls. I mean, we all know it. I mean, it's the last year of our current contracts. It's the second year of the 12-team playoff. It's the sixth year of a contract cycle where we went from 4 to 12 teams. We went from no transfer portal, no paying players. We had COVID. We had a Pac-12. We have no Pac-12. So it's a very odd kind of time in postseason college football. So to have Liberty Mutual, a Fortune 100 company based in Boston, to invest in our game, I think really kind of made us feel really good about what we've built. I mean, SEC, Big Ten, ESPN, Nashville, great destination. We've always had great solid attendance and great ratings. And, you know, I thought that was a real positive. So I kind of compared that a little bit to Coach Saban investing. I mean, it feels like Nashville's a good investment. And, you know, I think we've seen that on the corporate side a lot, but now we're seeing it in sports. And, you know, I think, you know, Willie, I know we've been here the whole time since since I came here in 95, and to think our city's gotten to this point where people like that are investing that kind of money in our cities, I think makes you feel pretty good about it.
It's impressive.
Yeah, it is. So, Scott, what made you, because this is Illinois' first time here in the Music City Bowl, was that one of the main reasons why you chose to, why the group chose to go with Illinois as a Big Ten team?
Yeah, I mean, Derek, you know, things are just so much different now with the 12 team. Uh-huh. I just kind of went through all the changes we had, but just look at the Big Ten side. So we signed the deal, had the 14 teams in the Big Ten. You had the West Coast guys. But to kind of make it patchwork with some Band-Aid and gum and duct tape, those four Pac-12 schools still kind of align with the old Pac-12 and the bowl lineup. So it kind of, the way the wins and losses now kind of jumble up, we still can only select, at least this year, through the original 14. So when you kind of work through it, it really was kind of, you know, we were kind of looking at Iowa, Nebraska, and Illinois kind of being in that 8-9 win kind of area. But we've had Iowa two of the last 3 years, and it just kind of fell that way where Illinois could drive down here. They'd never been here. Same with Nebraska to Vegas. And it just kind of worked out pretty good there with Iowa falling to Tampa. So, you know, I'd like to say it was, boy, we had a really big choice, but we kind of had that kind of earmark for a couple weeks as we kind of played out the regular season. And I was excited about it. You know, I think anytime we could get a fan base that could drive here, we've seen that with Purdue. We've seen that with a lot of SEC teams. We saw it with some ACC teams when we were there. It seems to really do better to give fans a chance to kind of come for two or three days to Nashville and support their team.
So what are some of the new and unique things? Because you want every year to sort of be different and cater toward the two teams that are coming in their fan bases. One, what are some new possible new things that you guys have added to this year's bowl? And then because of the construction, what should, you know, fans that are coming in from Illinois or from Knoxville, what should they be aware of?
Well, you got to be here on the night before for Battle of Bands. I think still a pretty iconic kind of set when you close down, you know, Broadway in the middle of Music City and put 800 or 900 band members on there for, you know, 30 or 40 minutes playing and reverberating off the buildings. That's a great fan event. A lot of alumni activities that night on Broadway. So that's a real kind of fan-driven thing. Certainly our tailgate party is going to, should be the same this year, Derek, but to your point, things are going to have to change a little bit right now while the new stadium is being constructed. And really the teams have kind of gotten to the point, Derek, where, you know, they really like some free time. And we're having an opening event at Cat 10 with all the players. But, you know, they like some free time. They like the indoor water park at Gaylord Opryland and certainly those kind of things. So, you know, we'll see. Certainly Tennessee's been here before, but not a lot of these players as the roster's changed. So, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, this year, certainly we're excited about the time slot. 5:30 Eastern is a great slot for us to get a lot of promotion for the city and for our sponsor. And you never know. You might see, Emu running around.
We're just looking at a commercial
exactly.
With Emu in there. Well, Scott, I'm going to ask this open-ended because you kind of laid out what's looking at. But just as you look into the future with the new stadium and the way the playoff is always evolving, bowls are evolving, like when you talk to your colleagues and you kind of think, you know, what do I want this bowl game to look like in a couple years? What are some of the things that go through your mind?
Boy, that is open-ended, Willie. I know,
take it wherever you want to go.
So we're on a time limit here. I think a big picture answer is after this year, I think – the decision that the commissioners and the respective conferences in the AD rooms, and I'm talking about mostly the Power Four from our seat, they're going to have to make a decision on what do they want postseason to look like. I mean, for 100-some years, it was the bowls. For the last two or three, it's been kind of this hybrid-y, grow the playoffs, kind of keep the bowls, kind of not, kind of whatever, pay the players, not pay the players. You know, so I think they've got to make some decisions on what they want their postseason to look like for their institutions. Then we as cities can respond to that. And I really don't know kind of – there's so many ideas out there. I mean, do they just want to go all playoffs and cover up every every game day or weekend or play day kind of leading in. They might. So I think from our side, Willie, I feel really confident of where we are as Nashville. I think we got a great destination. We're geographically well positioned. We've got the best partners we could possibly get in college sports in the SEC, Big Ten, and ESPN. We got a brand new Fortune 100 title sponsor. We're ready to kind of respond to what those opportunities are going to be. And if that's the traditional bowl, then I really like our lineup right now of who we have. But we are seeing some apathy in the bowls. There's no doubt about it. Viewership's good. But really the interest to kind of follow and excite and have the fun that we've seen fans have 15 years ago is starting to be a challenge. And I think you'll see that in a lot of stadiums. And that's not – we're not – don't have your head in the sand. But, again, we're at a six-year – we're at the end of a six-year agreement, and we've got to all kind of retool it. And I like where we are as a city because I think we can be as competitive as anybody in the country with opportunities that are out there to participate and keep college football at a very high level in our city.
All right, Scott, you mentioned it. We go back to the beginning of this thing. And I was telling Adam and Derek about the first Music City Bowl at Vanderbilt Stadium, which was a great crowd, Virginia Tech and Alabama. But I want you to give your recollection the weather and in particular, the halftime performance of Steve Winwood, which was unbelievable under the circumstances.
Well, wow. Gosh, Willie, I didn't know we had this much time on this one. But here we go. So 1998, we started the bowl game. We started in 98 because Commissioner Kramer at that time, conferences were just starting to tie into cities. So we were open-ended. But SEC wanted to start 1 year before the stadium. We said, okay, so we played at Vanderbilt. And the day started out, it was like a mid-afternoon kick. We had Alabama, Virginia Tech. It was Michael Vick's redshirt year. And it was Mike DeBose at Alabama. And, of course, Frank Beamer and Virginia Tech was coming up. And we could have sold that stadium out three times.
Yes.
Actually, Alabama tried to pay for bleachers to get built in that one end zone to sell more tickets. So anyway, we get to the day, and the day starts out at like 55 or 60 at 9 a.m. By 1 or 2 o'clock, it is freezing rain sideways, and the bleachers have frozen over. We've got volunteers led by Rick Regan out there chipping ice off the stairs to get fans up in them. So we had a Grammy Award-winning jazz guitarist, Larry Carlton, playing the national anthem. Got out there, and the chords on his guitar froze and kind of messed up the national anthem. And the fans started singing over him, and he was so embarrassed. You know, but they were frozen. And then Steve Winwood, during the freezing rain, played at halftime. And we didn't have the lights come on hardly on one side of the stadium until like 30 minutes before the game, and ESPN was ready to pull the plug. We had to get the electrician from Vanderbilt in there with hot pads on, and you know, so it's certainly a full chapter in my book if I ever write one of going through that first day, because I remember thinking, well, this is a one and done in my career. And so 28 years later, I didn't think I'd be seeing a new covered stadium being built across the river that hopefully we'll be playing another game in someday.
Well, I think the forecast is expected to be much better on December 30th at Nissan Stadium. Tennessee versus Illinois in the Music City Bowl. Scott Ramsey, president and CEO of the Music City Bowl, has been our guest on D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Scott, thank you so much for your time. Have a happy holiday and a wonderful new year.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. Merry Christmas, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you, Scott. 615-737-1025. Again, we do have one more pair of Music City Bowl tickets to give away. I still haven't told you when, and you have to listen. You have to keep listening to find out, because I'm not going to give you much advanced warning on when we are going to give away those tickets. So keep listening. You will have an opportunity to win our last pair of Music City Bowl tickets coming up. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, can the Titans do it? And by it, I'll tell you what I mean coming back. 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com.